So you're going to have to see how every player works with one another and how that's going to then impact every individual player and then go from there. And I feel like once you understand how you can, you know, go from the macro element and then individualize everything, it really helps you better understand everything as a whole, just so much more clear.
Hey, what's up, everybody? GP here, special guest. We have Dylan Garber for the first video Risk Takers podcast ever. It'll be released video and audio. Dylan is super sharp. You probably know him on Twitter from dropping a lot of knowledge and never afraid to stand up to the bookmakers when they've acted unfairly. Dylan, welcome to the podcast, man.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So why don't you give us just a little bit rundown? I think it's pretty interesting because it seems like you've been betting for a while, but you're also a junior in college. Like, how did you get your start with this?
So being around a ton of people early on who bet, it was always inevitable that I was going to, you know, start betting at some point. I ultimately started betting around freshman year of high school. You know, just doing like small stuff here and there with my friends, nothing too serious. But it was really when I was a senior in high school, when I first came across Prize Picks and had a little bit of success on there initially, that I realized that I could, you know, turn my knowledge of sports into much larger success betting wise. And, you know, fast forward now, I definitely could have never imagined the level of success that I've had or the ability to, you know, make my name become pretty common amongst conversations of people in the industry. But it's just been an absolutely amazing ride.
Yeah, man. So you started at Prize Picks. You must have been an early Prize Picks adapter then.
So back then, I actually had to travel from New York into Connecticut because New York had everything illegal and everything was legal in Connecticut. So I would drive like 2 minutes from my house into a side road in Connecticut. And that's where I'd have to be able to place all of my plays and everything. So, a little rough starting out.
That's a classic AP tale. You know, it's a little bit better than being a blackjack player on the road 100 miles between the casinos. But yeah, that's awesome. So you were playing when it was just fantasy score, right? Prize was only fantasy score.
Interesting. So I remember the first time I was on there, they had done a like promos when Kendall Hinton was starting at quarterback for the Broncos and they were offering like a free pick special. So I just did a 5 pick, all quarterbacks, all unders, and they all soared under. And that 10X still looms very large in my head to this day.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like, I remember like a big poker hand I had in a tournament when I was like about your age that like basically, long story short, it was heads up for the tournament and it was like ace queen versus ace 10. He hits a 10. I hit a queen on the river. And I'm like, wow, that was like triple, quadruple my bankroll at the time. And I was like, wow, if I didn't hit that queen, like, what happens if you didn't hit that 10X? Is that what you think? Like, wow, if I didn't hit that initial 10X, like what happens?
I don't know if I'd be here today.
Crazy. That's how it goes. But I mean, you know, tons of variants. That's the good variants. Like that's the really good hidden variants.
We love the good variants.
The good variants. Yeah, man. So you're playing Prize Picks. You're playing the DFS Pick'em. Are you basically just betting your opinions at that point? Like how has your betting strategy kind of evolved since that first 10X?
When I first started, a lot of it was more so, I have a lot of knowledge on sports. Let's see how my knowledge can beat Vegas.
Yep.
Obviously, it did not beat Vegas very well at that point. So, you know, after I like probably got back down to even on Prize Picks, I took a break for about 6 or 7 months. And then freshman year of college, I ultimately found myself needing some money. I saw that there was like $25 left in my Prize Picks account. And I just thought to myself, let's see what we can do with this.
Wow. So you just go right to the tacos or like what?
Nope.
No, just flaccid.
No tacos. Brett and I are very strict on our no discount policy.
Yeah. Okay. What's the, why no discount?
You just have to assume that anything nice that a sports book is going to do has to have some hidden meaning behind it. And ultimately, as we've seen with the tacos, they haven't always hit. Find Jalen Brunson last night, only shot the ball 9 times in 34 minutes. They had to have known something for him to be an option in the first place. And I feel like there are better means of building your bankroll than relying only on discounts. And I think, you know, a 3-4 point discount in the grand scheme of things isn't something that's necessarily too big. If you can attack maybe like the 8-10 point discounts or like the 50-yard discounts, I think those are a lot more worth it.
So do you feel like you're more inclined to go take an under on a sportsbook line for that tacos prop? Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I know this is a big topic of conversation. I mean, historically, right, the tacos are plus EV.
Yeah.
Sure. But you're saying like there's better ways to attack them, which would be under on the traditional prop. Maybe
there's always going to be an element of skepticism in my mind with anything that's presented as, you know, some sort of promotion. Whether or not it actually has that incorporated into it is one thing, but just being someone who has seen all the stuff that all the books and prop platforms have done to people, it's just always going to be in my head and it's always going to linger.
Yeah, well, I think like the worst version of it is the pre-built parlays, right? On name your site. You know, Caesars is pretty bad with them. Everyone is bad with them. But yeah, so basically you're starting out from like, I'm originating, I'm picking sports that I know really well. So that would be, I assume like at the moment, football was your most watched, but it seems like you're known for soccer right now. So why soccer? When that transition happened? Tell me about that.
So I never really watched any soccer until 7th grade. And then like out of nowhere, I don't even remember what specifically happened. I just started to fall in love with the sport. And once I started getting into betting, I tried to incorporate just some of my knowledge with formations and how coaches work, how players work. And ultimately I found that, you know, the analytics behind soccer were able to be translated really well into the sports betting landscape. And ultimately, it's not only expanded my knowledge of soccer from just simply sports betting, but just as a sport in general.
So you said something really interesting and really important there. And a lot of people I respect who are specialists in team sports talk about rotations, basketball, soccer. And this is where you diverge from what I would call the optimizer crowd, right? Is a lot of your alpha, a lot of the plays you're finding are based on coaching tendencies and just, you know, rotations and knowing that sport. Like I know your friend Brett knows basketball really well, right? And you might know too, you know, basketball as well, but it seems like you're first and foremost focused on soccer and you're getting alpha from just being more plugged in than other people.
Even though the prop industry is more focused on the micro element, you still have the macro and the micro within, you know, the little niche of prop betting. Because you're always going to have the team as a whole. So you're going to have to see how every player works with one another and how that's going to then impact every individual player and then go from there. And I feel like once you understand how you can, you know, go from the macro element and then individualize everything, it really helps you better understand everything as a whole, just so much more clear.
Got it. And are you modeling? Do you have like a process that's like half model, half, you know, kind of finger of the wind, expert knowledge?
So for a few of the stats that aren't offered like on a traditional sports book, let's say clearances, tackles, shots assisted, I have like a little bit of an algorithm that I used a lot last year.
Yeah.
This year I haven't really used as much. I've done a lot more manual research, just trying to pick and choose my spots because they've very much narrowed down on the edge that you can have in those spots. So I would say this year it's probably been a little bit more of just pure knowledge and like a little bit of data involved, whereas last year it was pretty much strictly data. Interesting. Once I was just like trying to get the hang of it.
Interesting. And what do you think about that transition? Like, has it been more profitable? Has it been harder, easier?
It's just been much harder to win in general with clearance props. So I don't know if you know a lot about soccer.
Not really.
So pretty much defensively, you have center backs, guys who play in the middle of defense, and then you have fullbacks and wingbacks who play further out wide.
Okay.
People who get most of the clearances are those people that are playing in the middle. So, of course, their numbers are going to be higher. Last year, both Underdog and Prize Picks, specifically Underdog, they would provide clearance lines for those guys who were playing out wide. And okay. So they would have them at like 2.5 clearances, 3.5 clearances. And I would say 80% of the time, they'd go under those lines. So it'd be very easy to be profitable because they'd have those lines where it's clearly erroneous that they shouldn't have had lines to begin with. But now they've taken all those out. They don't even offer them anymore.
So basically what was happening, in your opinion, was they were putting some type of like center back number on the other defenders.
Exactly.
How important is it to when you, so that's just a defined edge, right? Like, I like to think about my edges. It's like, okay, this is one edge. It's in a box over here. I'll go see if that, and then I'll go to this edge and whatever. That's an edge. How important for you is it to like know why you have an edge? Like in that situation to be like, wow, I know what they're doing. Is that like very important to you?
Yes. The most important edge in all of soccer is being able to identify positional discrepancies.
Mm.
So this past weekend, there was this center back on a team called Aston Villa who had a clearance line of 3. However, they didn't expect him to play fullback that game. So everyone immediately rushed in, took his under 3 clearances. He ended with 2. There are times where SofaScore and FootMob, who are the two primary sites that people use for soccer, will list a lineup. And if you don't know how the team normally lines up or how the manager likes to line up, you might take that for face value and not really understand what the exact lineup is going to be like. So it's very important to understand like a team from not just an analytical standpoint, but just being able to watch them and know how they play. And then you'll be able to get more of an edge when picking and choosing your props.
Got it. And how many leagues can you follow enough where you can get an edge on teams' lineups?
I'd say the top 5 European leagues, all 3 of the continental leagues, and all the internationals.
That's crazy. That's crazy, man. How much time do you spend just deep in the soccer weeds each day?
Say about an hour or two every day.
Yeah. Because you have like a lot of work that you stack on top, so you know where to look. Know what's normal. Yeah, that's good.
And then I you know, I have to do that. And then I have all my other sports, which I try and touch on every day if I can.
Yeah. And the amount of time you spend on other sports, or the strategy that you have for other sports, it must be different than soccer, right? Because soccer, you're like top, 0.5% knowledge of how it all works, but you can't do that for every sport, right?
Yeah. So there are some sports where I have to rely more so on odds because I don't necessarily have the time to be able to go through all the coach speak, be able to watch all the film. Whereas other sports like UFC, for example, rely a lot more on being able to watch fighter film and understand how a fighter fights and how they're going to be able to match up stylistically against their opponent and then be able to do all the research from there.
Got it. So is UFC, what's your number 2 sport? Is it UFC?
I would say probably UFC. I mean, I focus so much on so many different sports, but I just love watching UFC.
Got it. And it seems like you're taking like a non-odd screen approach to UFC. So you're taking, you're watching, you have an opinion, and you're, I assume, finding the best price and then betting on that opinion.
Pretty much.
So that's the golden rule. So obviously we all know correlation getting a little weaker in the DFS streets. I've gotten a lot of questions on, you know, from people who are a little worried about what to do next. I think you're a great person to talk about this with because your alpha, your edge isn't reliant on correlation. Can you what would you tell somebody who's, you know, in a Discord tailing maybe some correlated parlays, they have a odds jam, you know, optimizer, but their edge is kind of going down. They're not finding as many spots. Like, what would you tell them to take that next step?
So what I would say is that instead of focusing on an entire game worth of correlation, just target a specific spot in the game. So let's say it's soccer, for example. Target maybe just a player's shots on target and the opposing goalkeeper's saves. NFL, maybe target, you know, someone's over for rushing yards or under for rushing yards and the opposing team's leading tackler. Yeah. You don't have to try and line up an entire game worth of correlation, but if you can stack little mini correlative scripts in one larger play,
yeah,
I feel like that will allow people to still be able to focus on correlation, not worry about getting that edge sort of nerfed.
Got it. So you would have you'd play like a 6x on Prize Picks that has like three little packets of two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty smart because, you know, Prize Picks, I think sometimes they let the two pack slide and they don't allow like the five on the same concept, whether it's, you know, passing under and whatnot. Yeah. That's a great point. That's a great point. Okay. And now, What I was getting at, but that was a good answer, and I haven't heard that before, and I think people get a lot out of that, was like, how would you get someone to go from primarily tailing other people? So whether that's truly just tailing in a Discord, whether it's chasing steam, or whether it's, you know, top of the odds, you know, odds jam screen, just like pluck the playoff and drop it in, to finding your own alpha, getting your own plays like you do in soccer.
I think all of it's just about experimentation. Even if you're not necessarily submitting what you're experimenting with, it's very good just to track your new habits and see if they're successful or not. Before I do anything with any new process or algorithm that I'm trying out, I'll always, you know, like write down my plays on a piece of paper. I won't necessarily submit them, but I'll track them and then see what the success rate of that was after. You can never be able to know what you're good at unless you try and either succeed or fail. And so within our mini Discord community, I always encourage people to, you know, be able to ask questions, try and figure out a strategy that could be useful for them. And what we've tried to do is enable some of more sharper guys that I'm connected with to be able to, you know, put their strategy out there for other people, just so everyone can see that it's not some like magical thing that I possess that no one else can have. It's something that, you know, with a little bit of trial and effort, you can figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, that's so spot on. And that actually gets at the reason why I think like I do these interviews now is that whether it's talking to you or, you know, Drew or whoever, I think the point is that you see someone's picket graph or whatever, and you think, oh my God, you know, must be some kind of robot, but it's just, you know, people doing the best they can, trying, you know, different things and finding edges, you know, where they can rinse and repeat, you know, it's doable. And I think that's important for people to understand or helpful.
I could not agree with you anymore about that.
Yeah. And now you have a Discord, which is DGN Labs, right? And that's part of a partnership with you and Brett, NBA Green Beans. You want to talk a little bit about that?
So around last year, I was trying to create my own content company.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I wanted to kind of be like what Barstool Sports or Book It Sports are, you know, being able to put out like gambling and just like analytical content out on IG or TikTok or stuff like that. So, you know, the idea progresses. And in September, Brett convinces me to go back to Sharing Plays. I had a little venture back in March of last year with some people from school where we sold some stuff. Very successful, but ultimately I just found it very hard to have a balance with that in school. So I ultimately decided to get out of that after about 2 months. Mm-hmm. But Brett was very persistent. He really believed that being able to connect with people through Sharing Plays would ultimately lead to the business as a whole growing much larger. So I obliged, and you know, we're almost 3 months in to that venture, and you know, I could never imagine the amount of success that we've had so far. It's been pretty crazy. And I always tell all of our subscribers that if it wasn't for the community that we've been able to build, I would have no interest in coming back and providing all of my insights. I mean, they've made it such a welcoming place. You know, they ask the right questions, and a lot of them just have such genuine interest in, you know, trying to help themselves. And for me, I feel like there's no better opportunity in life to be able to help others succeed.
Definitely. And especially in this where other people just really need a, you know, a computer and internet connection and, you know, $100 and you can get that first deposit bonus and start going. Like it's one of the, you know, lowest hanging fruit, I think, right now, just in the world, like some of this stuff. So no, that's awesome. It sounds like you have a good community. I know Brett's really sharp with MBA, and I like that you guys have an originating angle. Like my thing's golf, you know, of course, golf is awesome. Hero World Challenge.
Golf is the best sport. I will put that out there right now.
Wow. You heard it here. You heard it here. Well, Dylan, we'll have to do a, you and me, we'll have to get on the course and do, maybe like put a couple of bets on the course and do a video like that.
You know what? I mean, the handicap isn't too bad right now, but. You know,
too bad as in like it's high.
It's a little high, but we're working on it.
Yeah. You want a high handicap. I love people who are like, who just like artificially lower their handicap by, you know, lying about their scores. It's like, get a high handicap. That'll make you more money. You know,
just gotta work on getting it from the fairway to the green and then from the green to the hole.
Okay. And then okay.
If we have all that down, everything will be good.
Yeah. That's like, it's only like 75% of it. but yeah, like what I was saying is I do a mix. Like I see me and my partner, Dame Dahl's process, similar to yours. We have one sport that we originate in, we know really, really well. And then we have other sports that, you know, we see spots come up and we take them. You know, we're not going to be the person who's like, creating MBA projections. Like that's not going to be us, but if there's like an MBA single game correlation, you know, parlay spot that we know about, we'll take it, you know? So it's like that mix of you have the low hanging fruit and then you have like your bread and butter. And I really think that that's the optimal way to take that step to the next level. And a lot of people right now have a lot of low hanging fruit, but no specialty. And I always say like, it's really helpful to specialize because the sports books aren't going to be able to put all their focus and each individual bettor is not going to be able to focus on 9 sports. The best chance you give yourself, the only chance you give yourself is to just go hard down the rabbit hole in one sport and just know it front and back.
So that, I mean, that honestly could not be more relevant to my partnership with Brett. He focuses only on basketball. He doesn't really have any other interest in any other sports. He loves basketball. Me, on the other hand, I love every sport to I just love every sport pretty much equally for the most part. I mean, there are some sports I like a little bit more than others, but I try not to leave myself like too focused on one area. I try and look at all my sports, find the best edges on all those sports and not dive super deep. Whereas Brett is able to, or he's enabled to, you know, focus just entirely on NBA. And I think that allows him to be successful, that he doesn't have to worry about other sports. He can just focus on NBA. And I personally like being able to have my mind be focused on different sports.
Yeah. No, that's great. No, I love that. So you're going around, you're picking, you're basically just going on a treasure hunt for edges. It's pretty fun.
Just got pick and choose your spots. Hopefully you strike the X here and there and, you know, find the golden edge.
How do you break up R&D, which would be like that process of finding edges, and then hammering the ones you currently have? You know, how do you see those coexist?
I guess it would just be through trial and error and just trying to understand how to properly assess lines and markets for all the different stats across all the sports. So MMA would be focusing primarily on significant strikes and takedowns. For baseball, it would be strikeouts. For soccer, it would maybe be clearances and saves and stuff that isn't necessarily available to bet on a normal sports book.
And why do you like to find stuff that isn't available to bet on at a normal sports book?
When there's less data and less markets for a prop, ultimately there's going to be more edge to open up, because Prize Picks and Underdog, when they drop a takedown line, they don't necessarily have, you know, a third party sports book that they're going to be able to refer those lines to. They have as much data as we have in that. They might have a little bit more, but ultimately they don't possess the amount of money that, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel does in order to make a line. So that's where the edge lies, in that they don't have all the different resources that the sports books do that go into making that line, or at least not as many resources.
Couldn't agree more. And I think this is good, because this, I talk a lot about, I used one example of when we did really well at Fairways Hit in golf, because Prize Picks was the only site that offered it. And we just, you know, made something that predicted it better, and they didn't have any backup. They didn't have anywhere they could go and be like, oh, is this right? So you kind of have them in a corner if you build the model better and you focus on it, because they don't want to focus on Ferris. They're trying to do NFL or whatever.
Yeah.
They're just throwing that up there. So
It's like the lower exposure spots that ultimately have the higher rate of profitability.
And such an important thing to realize in DFS, like Prize Picks, and we'll get to traditional sports betting as well, because, you know, I wanna go there. But you could bet the same amount on a Fairways hit prop as you could on like a baseball prop, at least when they had them up, like pitcher strikeouts or Fairways hit. And like, that shouldn't be the case, but it is the case. In DFS, like, you bet the same at the open as you can at the close, and there's such a smooth total amount across all sports. Like, there's not, you can't bet like 30x on NFL that you could on golf. It's more like 2x or 3x.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about traditional sports betting, because you're involved in that too. I know I see Brett posting a lot of FanDuel SGP stuff. Tell me about what you would tell, or what do you tell your subscribers who are DFS first looking to transition over? Because we got like, we've got more states opening up, and, you know, how do you make that jump?
So I'd like to tell them that, very simple, DFS focused almost entirely on parlays. And so if you have a spot that you like, you might not necessarily be able to place it on its own. You might have to pair it with something else, and then you might have, you know, bad luck from there, even if your play hits. So what I try and tell people with sports books is that that's where the edge truly opens up. You don't have to do parlays. You can identify the spots that you love and have no additional baggage having to be carried onto those spots. And, you know, all the sports books are different. They all set different lines. They all have different juices. And so I try and encourage people that if they can, you know, to deposit money onto some sports books and just be able to do a little bit of cross-platform analysis. Find a player that you like, put some research into that, and then you might be able to find them at a more optimal price compared to a Prize Picks, which is offering, you know, static odds of -137 on a 2-pick.
Right.
And you might be able to take the play you like at maybe even plus money, plus 100, yeah. -110.
Yeah. And when you say cross-platform analysis, that's basically using an odd screen or, you know, having a bunch of books up and checking prices.
I always like to tell my subscribers to do it manually, because once you're doing it manually, you ultimately come across different props that you might not even have realized were, you know, filled with edges. Last night, for example, I was just checking second half lines across all the different New York sports books for the Miami Heat game. And out of nowhere, I came across this amazing arbitrage opportunity on Kyle Lowry rebounds. I would have never come across that had I not just been looking myself for all that. And so I sent it out. He's +110 on the over, +105 on the under. Told my subscribers, you know, bet equal units, get some free profit.
I couldn't agree more. It's like, if you do the stuff that's a little harder, a little more manual, it's so worth it, because 95% of people aren't doing that. And then those edges sit open for a longer amount of time. The edges that pop up on, you know, any odd screen
can be taken off like that.
Like that. So, you know, I think I love it. I always say go off screen. Like, I use, to be fair, a bunch of different odd screens. Like, it's worth it, but that's only for specific things. Like, most of my work is done off screen for that, because what you find off screen, just like Dylan just talked about, these are going to be edges that not only can you bet, but if you're someone like Dylan who has people who are, you know, you're giving out bets to, you can't just give them the top play off an odd screen. It'll be gone by the time you send it. So if you're going to give them a play, it has to have some kind of original, you know, secret sauce on it that's going to be able to keep it up for like 5 minutes, you know.
What I would recommend for those who aren't, for those who are just starting out with the cross-platform analysis and don't necessarily want to pay for an odds jam or a DGF, highly recommend that you use Action Network.
Interesting.
And what I've started to do is, let's say, you know, I might not necessarily have the time to be able to go across all the books, and there's like one or two props I just want to see where the market is for, like an assist or a rebound prop. I'll go on the Action Network. They'll show all the sports books that I'm able to use, and they'll just show me the lines. So even like a quick 5-10 seconds of doing that when I just need something really, really fast can be super helpful.
Interesting. And do you know what the time delay is? Is it like?
It's pretty instantaneous. I mean, Maybe might be like a minute or two.
Okay.
But even then, if it's a minute or two, I think it's something that's very manageable.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're just starting out, right? And because I had that question come up, and I might as well kick it over to you. What if you're somebody who has like a couple $100 bankroll who might not be able to buy OddsJam or even really sub to a premium Discord? Like, let's just say that's, you know, they feel like that's a little expensive. What would you tell them to do?
I would personally tell them to get OddsJam. And what I've started to do on stream is I've started to introduce people to, you know, something that I'll do where I will go through all the rebound and assist props, because I feel like those have more edge. We'll go on Action Network and I'll talk about spots that I want to target, and we'll see if there are any full point discrepancies or anything like that. It's just, you know, small things like that. When you want to try and do stuff on your own, you don't have to get like OddsJam, DGF, or any of the fancy optimizers. Just break it down a little bit and, you know, try and do some of it yourself. And I think ultimately the edges that you find yourself without using all the expensive technology is going to pay massive dividends in the end.
I Couldn't agree more. Especially if you have stuff that you even start to build yourself. That's even better.
I tried getting some computer people to help, and you know, it's been great that Brett and I have been able to develop so many great connections. Shout out Mike and our boy Huey, who have been so helpful in helping us be able to sort of automate our processes with cross-platform analysis. They've been absolutely huge for us. And that's why I love just being able to network in this community. I would have never come across them. I would have never come across you. And I love just being able to talk about, you know, all of this with such great people.
Yeah. To me. Yeah. No, that's something that everybody who's come on Halo put a premium on it. Drew is a master networker. He knows everybody. It's like, it's so valuable, and it was so hard for me to put a couple edges out there, whatever, to like put a little content out there, because I was always so afraid of like giving away info, you know, and whatnot. But I don't know. I assume you'd agree. It's just so worth it.
Yeah. 1000%.
Because you meet, like I met somebody, like you're saying, you know, you've met some people who help you or looking to help you with some programming. Like I've the same thing. Like there's somebody who reached out to me and was like, hey, like, or a few people, like, because I was like, hey, I'm trying to switch from Excel to Python. And someone, and a few people reached out and they're like, yeah, like, let me help you. And they, people have been so helpful. Like, really, it's worth it to put yourself out there. And it's the value of any, you know, joining a Discord too. And just, you don't have to like post on Twitter. If that's, you know, maybe like two out there or whatever, but you could join a Discord and find a small community and meet people that way.
Yeah. And I love that, at least the DGN Discord, I didn't really initially want to create one, but, you know, Brent and I started to talk and we said, you know, we have a couple of great subscribers that we would love, you know, to start, like have like a little bit more of a personal connection with. And we like intentionally keep it small just so that we can have some of our sharper members and those who really, really want to learn more and be able to enable themselves to do a lot more stuff solo, that they have the opportunity to have access to us and to our community whenever they want.
That's great. And
ultimately, the one thing I can say that really makes me so proud of DGN is our personal connection to all the people in our community. The fact that we, you know, go on streams consistently, the fact that we have our Discord, that we're able to develop such a personal, genuine connection with anyone, with everyone that's in our community, because, you know, we all have the same goals and we all want to enable everyone to be able to go about their goals to the best of their ability.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it sounds like I like the learn. You seems like you put a very large emphasis on not just giving plays, but teaching people how to, you know, to cliche, how to fish, right?
Yeah.
Why?
For me, the one thing that really enabled me to have success in this industry was being able to be self-sufficient and try and find all the edges on my own. Just being able to do a lot more stuff on my own and not really having to rely on others. And, you know, of course, we provide a ton of plays. That's why we're there. But like I completely emphasize with anyone that wants to be able to try and do stuff on their own, I don't really see, you know, this as being, oh, like I just want to take money from my consumers. My goal is that everyone that's with us is ultimately able to become profitable in their own way and not have to be reliant on us. And that's why like I've been very happy in our Discord to give voices to those who might not necessarily have massive followings on Twitter, but those that have, you know, started to become very profitable on their own and want to be able to share what they could do with others. Because I want everyone to be able to succeed on their own. I really want to help everyone be self-sufficient and become enabled to not have to rely on other people. And I take plays and collaborate with other people all the time. And I want people to understand how to get to that point without having to always, you know, buy or listen from someone else.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great goal. And that's kind of like, so for me, it's almost like I try and do everything I can to make stuff evergreen and applicable, like outside of handing somebody a slip. And I do in my Discord give people some golf stuff and, you know, answer questions on correlation or whatever it is. But two reasons. One, I have to make money betting on golf. So I don't want to put all my plays out there. Because if someone gave me like 8 of their golf plays, I could probably back into their model like pretty easily. So if I do the same, I don't want people to do that, but I still kind of give them out. But two, it's like, it's more valuable. Imagine you create another Dylan. Like, you're not going to be able to give somebody, you know, 100K worth of plays, but you could teach them how to make 100K on their own. The only way they're going to make 100K is if they get it on their own. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my thinking. That's my thinking too. And that's so achievable right now. It's just, you know, it does take that, okay, I get it. Now I'm going to really go attack and find every edge and, you know, max it out, because it's doable. But I just don't know if you can make 100K just purely through tailing.
I think it's very, very, very difficult. And I'm, you know, very forthright about that to my guys, that it's, you know, you're not always going to be able to achieve maximum profit simply telling others. You have to try and, you know, do some of it yourself. And we always help people go about being able to do it themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. No worries. No worries.
Just unplugged.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. So what are your... How do you feel about the future of U.S. sports betting? You can talk about DFS, you can talk about online sports betting, whatever. But where do you see this going, and where do you see yourself fitting into it?
Very optimistically, I really hope that every state is just going to start legalizing all sports books, all DFS platforms. Now, seeing the amount of influence that the major sports books have and how they're trying to monopolize the betting industry and just have, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, for example, are trying in New York to eliminate all of their prop platform competitors because they want to be the only ones in that space.
Yes.
And so I really, really hope that doesn't become the case. Because the prop platforms for people below the age of 21, you know, it's something that they can use to grow and profit in their own way if they aren't able to use a sports book. And so I really hope that the sports books stop trying to be so strict and stop trying to prevent people who, you know, profit more on the prop sites to be able to continue to do that.
How do you see an equilibrium between sharp bettors and sports books? Like, how do we coexist?
I honestly hate to say this, but this is what an anonymous, very trustworthy source told me. Gotta make as many accounts as you can. You got it. You have to exploit the edge while you can. And I would absolutely love to divulge into how I've been able to go about that. Maybe we can do that after the interview if you're interested. Tell you more about that. But I'm just gonna say this right now. This is the one word I always use, and those of you who know me know exactly why I'm talking about. Get as many resources as you can.
Resources.
As many resources as you can.
Betting partners.
As you can.
Yeah. There are sites like Circa, Pinnacle, BetCris, Bookmaker, whatever, that do take sharp action. But I tend to agree with Dylan that if you really want to make a lot of money, you basically have to have betting partners. And that's just a fact. And I mean, you know, that's fine. You're selling your information to other people and they're betting with it. It's great.
Yeah. Like Brett is very fortunate that he was down so much originally on his FanDuel account before he started to, you know, adopt this style of betting, that now they let him throw an X amount of money, like whatever he wants to throw. Like last night, they let him throw, I think he threw 10,000 on the Bucks live last night.
Wow.
And they let him put down all that action, or they'll let him throw like 1,500 on any given play. And with
Is
me,
that
like
a prop, 1,500 yeah. on a prop.
Yeah. For me, they might let me throw 300, maybe yeah. occasionally 500 or 600.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's called whale flipping, but Brett flipped himself.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what Billy Walters would do, is he'd just go, we could talk about Bill. I'm sure
I always recommend, my dad introduced me to Billy Walters at a very young age. And whenever anyone talks about like who, like I'd recommend for them to like read or listen to before getting into this industry, I always recommend Billy Walters.
Yeah, me too. And I think he's done the best job of basically like turning betting into an enterprise, and making it a business. And I think that's something that is the next step. There's, you know, you're winning on the props. It's a side hustle. If you want to go and do this full time, you should learn about Billy Walters and the other people who have created successful syndicates. Because what a syndicate really is, it's literally just like a betting business. It's a hedge fund for betting, right? And like to make it like that, you think about it very systematically. And it seems like that's kind of the approach that you're taking.
People always ask why I try and talk so academically and analytically about everything that I do in betting. I mean, very simply, betting, I feel like, will always have some sort of stigma. You know, like my mom and my grandparents, for example, don't really understand what I do.
Yeah.
And so I'll be like, I have a plan, like, oh, like, what are you doing? Whereas my dad, who understands everything that I do and has been my biggest supporter throughout all this, understands exactly what I'm trying to do and understands the parallels for betting compared to, let's say, you know, someone that's trading stocks. And I feel like once you're able to explain the relative similarities between sports betting and someone that's maybe like a sales trader or something like that, I feel like then you could start to, you know, break the stigma and allow people to understand how sports betting is not just random degenerate behavior, but something that can be profitable if you have the right mindset.
I think that's great. I have noticed that you do talk very academically about betting, and you don't talk like a Spanky or like one of the older school people, which I love both approaches, of course.
You
but
do.
is that because you feel like you're at a stage in your life where, because you're younger, so I'm sure you have a lot of adults telling you, this happened to me in poker, like you can't beat the house, et cetera, right? Like, do you have to deal with a lot of that?
So honestly, at first there were a lot of people that were giving me that, but a lot of the older people that talk to me now are super, super encouraging.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate that I live in a community where every kid bets, every parent bets, literally every kid, the second they get into high school, they're betting.
Yeah.
It is a massive degenerate community. And I say that in a very good sense, because that has molded me into the determined better that I am today. But it's just so normalized.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so normalized. And that's why everyone tries to be super positive, and like they recognize like my success and yeah. how I've been able to go about it, and they give me their full support.
How do you feel being successful? I assume you've made, I don't know your picket. I know you're successful. Like you've made, or whatever your stats are, you've made 6 figures plus doing this, of course. What the hell is that like being a junior in college? Like how do your friends think about it? How do you think about it?
So the one thing that I try and avoid is having a lot of people back home know. Like very few of my friends at home know about it, and very few of my friends in general know about the scale at which I've done all this. I try, and you know, this is business.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually like don't really like talking about this with anyone outside the industry. I don't really like to, like, you know, be super prideful about my wins. I don't like to brag. That just isn't my personality. I'm more low key. Like, I like to be tight lipped about a lot of my stuff. And like, if people have a genuine interest and want to get in, that's great. But if you want to talk about like wins and stuff like that, and I always tell my dad, because he always talks about all of this with all of his friends, I don't, you know, it's not something that's really important. It's business.
Yeah, I agree.
I wouldn't want a doctor to have to tell me about all of his patients and dealings outside of, you know, a hospital. So I just don't like to talk about it that much. And I feel like trying to keep this sort of in a work mindset, thinking about all this as just being my job, that's what's really enabled my success.
Interesting. I really like that. I think that's going to help people out with how to approach this with the right mindset. And you also are a full-time student. How do you sleep, or like?
So this semester I was supposed to go to Vienna in Austria.
Got it. It's semester abroad.
Which obviously would not have been optimal, but I ended up getting a diagnosis that ultimately forced me to stay back for this semester, just have a little bit more oversight. So being here for a semester without having to fully focus on classes, I take online classes, but I don't have to necessarily be focused on those all the time. It's allowed me to, you know, take a step back, kind of reevaluate where I want to be in life, look at everything that's been going on with me, and ultimately allow for the business side of things to grow. But even last year when I was at school, I was sleeping maybe 3.5-4 hours a night.
It's crazy. Like
we can't have my parents know about that though.
That's they don't have to watch, you know. Well, maybe, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I did the same when I was a junior, I was like a freshman playing poker online. But I remember, you know, all night tournaments ending at like 6 a.m. and then just watching a movie between 6 and 8 because I didn't want to go to sleep before my next class started.
So you sound a lot like my grandpa. My grandpa, like 2 weeks ago, he had a heart procedure like in the morning. That night, he was up to like 1 o'clock playing online poker.
What a beast.
I will be like if I'm ever like staying over at their house and I like walk out of my room to get like a drink, it's like 1 a.m. He's still grinding poker at his computer.
Dude, like, I love your grandfather.
That's my inspiration.
No, you come from a good lineage of gamblers.
Oh, he is absolute inspiration with that. He just doesn't respect my poker abilities. I'll go behind all. It'll be I'll have like 4-6 off suit, and I'm like, oh, you got the nuts. He'll just be like, get away from me.
Yeah, dude, that's a little loose. That's a little loose, but that's why your sport's better. You know, that's why your sport's better. Speaking of, you said a minute or two ago, thinking about the future, when you had that semester off, like taking online classes, working on the business, giving you some time to think. Have you come to a conclusion of how you see yourself in the next couple of years after graduation?
All of my successes here have just allowed me to see that I can be successful if I want to go into another discipline. You know, I've put in a lot of work to be able to build my image, build my bankroll here. And I feel like just seeing the level of success I've had hopefully will allow me to translate that success somewhere else. But it showed me the value of hard work and how hard work can yield success. And do I want to do this for the rest of my life? No, but do I want to have, you know, something like this for the rest of my life? Of course. You know, I love doing this. Brett, I know for a fact, wants to continue doing this because he's like, this is the most success he's ever had has been through doing all this. But, you know, at least like money wise, like all the money I've been able to make, like I hopefully want to be able to use that money towards law school and whatever the next step in my academic career is.
Yeah.
But doing all this, just like, I want to work even harder with all my classes, want to get,
yeah,
you know, get great, continue, get really good grades and just continue to have success everywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's very wise. And people who've had success in this to the extent that you have, it's hard work at the end of the day. There's no way that you just like don't put in hours to have success. It's an inputs and outputs game. And like, but it really is an inputs and outputs game, and it translates to life. Like, I think about this with podcasts or whatever. It's like, if I just make enough podcasts and try and do a good job and have good guests on, like, it'll work. And I don't really worry too much about the rest of it, you know? And like you said, if you put in the work at class, you work towards goal, you'll do well in law school. It's like not, it kind of rips the veil off of like how this is all done. It's like not that complicated, right?
So one of the biggest quotes that I ever focus on is actually something from Brett's dad. So Brett's dad has been probably my biggest mentor with what I'm trying to do in my career, which is to be a sports agent. And so he always talks about the hypothetical scene where he's out to dinner with a bunch of people and, you know, one of his clients gives him a call and it's, you know, something important. Everything else that he was doing, none of that matters. All the attention immediately diverts to the client. It's the same thing with me. And, you know, is it optimal? No. But is it what I have to do in order to maintain the level of success I've had? Yes. If I'm, you know, out with my friends, I get like a big bit of injury news and it's something I have to react upon. You know, is it ideal that I have to go deal with this? No. But is it something that could potentially be detrimental to me if I don't take advantage of? Yes.
And honestly, that's probably how you win, because not many people are going to, you know, make that sacrifice.
There have been multiple times where I've been at parties at school where Brett's given me a call. It's like, oh, like I just, you know, have to quickly speak of the devil.
We'll get Brett on soon.
At a party, I've been at a function and Brett's called me and I have to get out of there. He's like, yo, like you got to do this, you got to do that. And I'm like, perfect.
Yeah. And I struggle with that a little bit because I'm like, wow, I work so much. Like it's, you know, I'm a phone guy. You know, I'm like, damn, do I have work-life balance? And I don't necessarily, but I always then am like, but you know what? That's okay. It's like not, that's fine. You know, everybody does them and it's not too big of a deal. If you want to take some more time off and enjoy like other stuff, that's great. And if, you know, you're trying to do what you're trying to do, which is epic shit, then sometimes you have to pick up the phone at a party and leave. And that's fine too.
It's not glamorous.
It's not glamorous.
It's what you got to do. And that's whenever I'm at my dad's apartment. So he lives pretty much on the border of New York and Connecticut.
Yeah.
And both of them are FanDuel legal states. Yet for some reason, because you're on the border of them, you can't bet. So like there'll be times where I'll be at his apartment and I'll be like on edge, where Brett's like calling me and we're talking about stuff. And it's like, oh, I would love to place that, but I'm on the border. I can't do anything right now. I'm pretty much useless. And I'll have to vent about it, which sucks, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, look, I have a lot of respect for what you're doing. I think you have your head on really straight. And obviously like people right now, all of the professional athletes that listen to this, which I know is millions, all of them listen to this. Dylan is, you got to buy low on Dylan as your agent right now. If you're a professional athlete, put this kid through law school yourself and then get him to be your agent. Like if you want to be a sports agent, you're going to be a beast of a sports agent.
If you're looking for a current agent, make sure you hit up John Feinsod and AMDG Sports, the best.
There we go. Shout out to, I'm guessing that's Brett's dad. There we go. Okay. Shout out to John. If you're, you know, one of the hundreds of thousands of professional athletes that does listen to this on a daily basis, hit up John Feinsod. Well, anyway, we're running up on the hour, Dylan, and I really enjoyed talking to you. I think you have a really unique, you know, I don't know why, but you kind of remind me of like a young Tom Dwan. I don't know, just except for you're going to stay in school and, you know, maybe go to grad school, but you know, that drive, that, you know, kind of outside the box thinking, it's pretty cool. Not a lot of people are doing originating multiple sports on top of also, as you call it, cross-platform analysis, and just finding edges wherever you can. That's hard work and it takes a lot of creativity. So I appreciate you coming on, man. It's been a pleasure to get to hear more about your process.
John, this has honestly been the most and probably been the most enjoyable conversation I have ever had. I cannot thank you enough for having me on here. Definitely have to continue talking to you. It's been absolute pleasure. And for anyone that's here, keep listening to him. He's the best. You know, before doing any podcast or anything, I needed to make sure that I got on here with him. And this has been absolutely amazing. So thank you so much again for the opportunity for having me come on.
Amazing, man. That actually really means a lot to me. That's why I do this. And this is the inaugural video podcast. So you will always have that. You'll be the first ever video guest.
You get to see my beautiful face.
That's right. That's right.
But my dad will surely give me a text the second he sees this and be like, wow, you really came on here without cutting your hair.
No, that's the TikTok haircut, right? As I'm told. It's just the sports better haircut where you don't have time to cut your hair.
You don't have time to cut my hair, put in all the parlays.
Yeah, I have the same problem. I have the same problem. Haircuts are so minus EV. It's crazy. All right, we'll leave it at that, Dylan. Thank you again. And to everybody listening, thanks for listening. Hit up Dylan. I'll put his socials and where you can reach him in the show notes so you can give him a follow and see how it's done. He really does put a lot out there on Twitter that's actually useful, and that's rare. So I would at least recommend following him on Twitter, if not hopping in his Discord. So thanks again to Dylan, and we will see everybody on the next episode.